Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jenna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour again on another Sunday morning here with Jenna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry. Ladies, how are we doing on this fine, fine Sunday on what is a hot, hot weekend?
It's been hot. Mm. We've had a hot, dry streak. Thank God for a couple of thunderstorms that came through, but
I actually turned on the AC for the first time this summer.
You? Yeah. Of all people.
I turned on the AC. Well, I did it for the cats. But I turned on the AC.
I could see you doing it for the animals more than yourself.
Yeah, because I'm not... You know what it is? And I was thinking about it the other day. I so have gotten to the point where I dislike winter that I never want to close my windows in the summertime. And I love fans. I like having fans going. I like the sound.
Yeah, me too.
You know?
I love the fresh air.
Yeah.
Whenever possible.
And that's one of the reasons that like I dread, you know, going home on the really hot days when the windows are all closed. Mm-hmm. So, but I did turn it on this week.
I can imagine you. I can picture you. Like, okay, here's the scene. There's like 800 cats, right? They're all over the place. They're on the bed. They're on top of the
refrigerator. And he knows every one of their names.
He knows every one of their names, all of their afflictions, all of their little weird quirks, whether they're blind in one eye, deaf in one ear, it doesn't matter. Cat towers, cat trees, they're all hanging. And because it's so hot, they're like half on their sides, half on their backs, splayed open. And then you come, you're like, oh, I really could just open these windows, but for the sake of the cats, I'm going to turn on the AC. And as you turn on the AC, you get such a nice blast of coolness, you end up stripping down to just your boxers, because we know that's what you wear.
I do wear boxers.
Hiking one leg up on a chair like the Captain Morgan guy.
Yep.
And just cooling
Captain.
The old family jewels. Did I get that right, Frankenberry?
Okay, well,
you got my vote. I bet you yes. That's exactly how it
now,
goes.
Now, obviously, you have exaggerated on the number of cats. Actually, to tell you the
truth,
really. you've probably underestimated on the number of cats. And but yes, when I do get home, if I do not have the AC on, that is, I generally just strip down to the boxers, and that is the walking around outfit for quite a while, and then I'll put on a pair of shorts. That's about it.
And a tank top, t-shirt.
No, I don't. I will put one on before I go to sleep. I don't sleep. I can't sleep without a shirt on. I have to have a shirt on.
So you go full on
bare chested,
redneck, bare chested.
Yes.
Okay, Carol, what's your walking around outfit when nobody's looking? Just you and Ginger, the dog.
Tank top, shorts, summertime. Usually wearing a bra.
Even when nobody's looking?
Because she's probably going to want to go out, and then I got to go back upstairs. You know, right. It's just too much work.
Right, right, right.
What about you there, Spilborg?
Well,
Are you helping the neighbor's boys go through puberty again?
I have to, you know, because this is what, you get older. And you start acting like the crazy neighbor, I think.
I think you are the crazy neighbor now.
Right? I think, because sometimes I'll walk, so I just like, I have a big oversized like sleeping t-shirt that says, save water, drink champagne. But it doesn't quite go past my butt.
Okay.
Okay, so when I'm home alone, I'll just kind of walk around that. However, then there are times when I need to go refill the bird seed, and I'll be like, it's just dark enough. I can probably just sneak out here.
Then, you're asking for trouble.
I put on a pair of high heels, because that's usually what's by the door. This ridiculous t-shirt that only kind of fits, and a big jug of bird seed to go refill the bird seed.
And no pants.
No pants. Hoping that nobody sees me.
And all the young.
You are
and all
taking
the young...
a big risk, because one of these days you're going to take a little digger and you'll be like, help.
No, gosh.
Help.
No, I'm going to have to call one of you two, because I ain't going to
know. No, you would be dragging yourself elbow by elbow, bloody and not even. Actually, right? I take that back. You wouldn't be going, help. You'd be as quiet as you could. Blood trailing along the deck. Pulled yourself into the
elbow in a raccoon. Get away from me. Get away. Get away from me.
Until you got changed and then you'd call 911.
Oh my God. That would be so embarrassing.
Well, like you went out to bring the garbage out the other day and you forgot you weren't wearing a bra.
In that same t-shirt. I threw on a pair of pants to get the garbage out. Yeah, but no bra.
She just did a little swaying movement with her hands here.
Yeah, dating myself on the reference, but all the young Dustin Hoffmans in your neighborhood, they've all got freaking telescopes. You know that, don't you? Or binoculars, one or the other.
Is that a Mrs. Robinson reference?
Yes, it is.
Have I reached Mrs. Robinson status?
Look, when you're wearing a t-shirt that doesn't quite cover the buttocks and you're throwing on a pair of high heels to walk out on your back patio, yeah, you are.
Like an idiot.
Do you remember Kim Hart? Our friend Kim Hart's story of, now she lives up in Rhinebeck. It's like not that many houses around her at all. She lives by herself. And she went out at night in her underwear and a t-shirt.
In the winter.
To get a bag of cat food out of the car. Yes. And as she's like taking stealth mode, stepping towards the car, somebody pulls in the driveway to turn around and she froze. Remember her post? I was crying, laughing. And she's like, well, that place is people got to turn around in my driveway when I have no pants on going to get the cat food.
She was like a deer in the headlights.
Exactly.
And I think the way she described it, because we love Kim Hart. Kim, if you're listening, we love you. But either she described it this way or this is just the image I have from the way she told the story, which is hilarious.
Crying. Oh my God.
I just have a feeling they weren't the sexiest of panties. They may have been granny-ish. On top of getting caught tiptoeing,
I think she was like finding humor in the moment and like making fun of herself. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Oh my God, you gotta be careful what you put on your bod when you.
Because you just never know. Yeah. And I have my front door has a weird. In fact, I gotta get a new front door. It has a weird like built-in shade like in between two panes of glass, and normally I keep that shade. They're like horizontal blinds, right? Mm-hmm. I keep them closed so nobody can see in with and I lift it up at the bottom so I get some light in. But I just love light. So recently, those shades have been open, and I'll walk around my house the way I walk around my house, and I just gotta hope that the Mormons don't come a knocking or the neighbors don't come a knocking, because there won't be any hiding from that, you know. But
yeah, I've gotten lucky in my place.
Back far enough off the road that I don't think you're going to get any walking traffic.
There. I come home to little pamphlets in my door.
Do you really?
I do.
Yeah, well, I've gotten lucky. I've had nobody accidentally drive, or not accidentally, but nobody have the perfect timing to be driving up the driveway just as I am, you know, shedding the clothes from the day. Mm. You know, because there is full-blown looking straight into the apartment when you get to just the top of the hill of the driveway and that one window at the front of my apartment. So.
And what time of day would that be? Asking for a friend.
That would be right around 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, that's good for somebody to know. Not me. I won't be doing it. Stealthily,
stalkily.
Or as
somebody else's car.
Or as a duo.
Hey, believe me. Nobody.
With our phones running in camera mode.
Hey, nobody.
We are due for an escapade. You know that? We really are. It's been a while.
But that's not one of them, because nobody needs to see this shirtless.
That's not one
I can
of
tell
them.
You right now, okay?
It's been a while since we put costumes on and went out. Wreaked havoc.
We had a good time.
Oh,
we almost got arrested. I love almost getting arrested with you. It's so much fun.
And that's kind of true.
Every time.
And then my mother sprayed us with a water bottle like we were feral cats. Get out of here.
And we ran like we were feral cats.
We were pranking her. And they're like, let's go prank the semi-crazy neighbor. And so we were in his window.
Yep.
And he did not recognize us because we were a couple of idiots in full-on disguise.
He was not happy.
No. He was like, get that out of here. And then we're not smart enough because that was in the side window. We go to the front door. And he opened that door like ready to.
I thought he was going to have a baseball bat with him.
And then I was I have to take these stupid lizard eye glasses off so you realize
Like, it's Carol.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we're due for some stupid, okay? Can we commit to some stupid in the next month?
We're going to commit to some stupid.
All right.
Yeah, me and you, while summer's still here.
Hangar Bear, you want a stupid with us?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever heard a lawyer saying, I loved almost getting arrested with you.
It was funny.
It's fun. Speaking of committing to stupid, I actually have a question to ask you, but let me precursor that.
We'll accept that. We'll allow it.
Last weekend was a little teeny tiny blackout in New York City that I was in.
Teeny tiny?
Well, it didn't take up the entire island, but it took up a good portion. And I learned during that I was at a restaurant when it happened, more concerned with getting a second
margarita,
watermelon martini, than I was with the fact that they had to come. Like, they kicked everybody out. I was in a restaurant in the middle of this blackout. They kicked everybody out and said, write your credit card number on this paper, and we're going to figure out what we gave you and send you a bill. Because there's no electricity. They couldn't run anything. So, and that part was fine. But getting out into the street was all kind of bedlam, because when you have no traffic lights in any portion of Manhattan on a busy weekend, with all the people who came out of the theaters, came out of the restaurants, came out of their apartments, just came out, and all the cars, and there were civilians literally trying to direct traffic who were basically getting run over. Like, it was, it was really crazy. And you don't think about how crazy it is till you're kind of in the middle of all that. It's funny, because when something huge happens, like, God forbid, like 9/11, you think New Yorkers come together. Something that's not so big, it's like, honk, honk, get out of my way before I run you over.
Was it at least still light out, by the way?
It was still light out for the first beginning.
Oh, okay.
But by the time I got back to my place, where I made it up 50 floors without losing electricity, and then 10 minutes later, the lights went out. By that time, it was dark. I took a lot of video of it. But before it got dark and before I got to my pad, I was with my much younger BF. And we were like, okay, since dinner got cut off in the middle, I'm like, I got extra points I can use. Let's go to that ice cream truck.
Way to go.
Yep. I mean, you know, when in Rome, right? Rome it. So we go over to this.
I don't really see how that applies, but okay.
Just let her go.
Okay.
We go over to this ice cream truck. Now, I'm going to describe what happened for you, and maybe we should name this segment one of a few things. We could either name the segment, How Right is Jonna on a Scale of 1 to 10?
I like that, actually.
That's a pretty good, right? Or maybe we could name it, How Wrong Was the Person Jonna Was With? On a scale of 1 to 10.
Like, I knew that was coming.
If we're going to have a regular segment. Or we can name it, Maybe Jonna Belongs on the Set of Little House on the Prairie. So here's what happened. We go to the ice cream truck. Very excited, since didn't have dinner. And I love ice cream. I don't get a lot of it because I'm dieting. Anyhow. So we walk over. We're standing in front of the truck, me and my much younger boyfriend. The truck dude comes over. What do you want? And my much younger boyfriend blurts out whatever it was that he wanted. And I look at him and I'm like, you know, you're supposed to let the lady go first, whether you're ordering ice cream, a drink, dinner. Now, I will preface this by saying he often forgets that rule. And for me, it is a rule.
Oh, you've had this discussion before.
We've had this discussion before. And I, you know, for a long time, I credit to the fact that, well, he's much younger. He doesn't know. But after enough time has passed, you should know. So he orders his thing. And I turn to him and I say,
poor guy.
But I'm in a good mood. And I say it jovially. And I'm like, ladies first. Like, duh. Right? Well, you would have thought I started World War III. He's like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? We're in the middle of a blackout. And I said, you didn't know what you want. He came over. He looked at me. I said, my order. What's the big deal? Why are you getting it? And he started this huge fight. So now I'm like, could you please shut up a minute? I'm going to order my ice cream now. Which I did. And then I walked one way and he walked another, because I was mad.
The end?
That's it.
That's it. Okay.
Did he eat his ice cream?
I don't know, and I don't care. I walked away eating mine. But we continued that fight once we did finally reconnect, neither one of us with ice cream in hand. We did continue that fight.
So you ended up at the same place later on, but you just walked a different route?
Yeah.
In a blackout?
Yeah.
And the part of that you were upset about was that he ordered his ice cream first, not that he wasn't going to make sure you got home safely in a blackout.
And I'm
get
still
your priorities straight, Billboard.
And I'm still missing the whole part about how you needed to be, you know, with Michael Landon.
So so here's the question. Am I old-fashioned to think that you're supposed, when you're with your betrothed and you happen to be a heterosexual couple, so there's one man and one woman, do you not? Is it not ladies first? Did I miss the memo? Did that go away like in 2017, 2018 at some point? Or am I right, as I usually am, and he's wrong? Like, who? Somebody back me up here.
All right, so I would make it less about whether you're right or wrong, because there are a whole contingent of women that don't want men holding the door for them anymore, which I think is
I'm not one of those.
Taking it a little bit too far. But I think it's less about what's right or wrong than it is about this is something that matters to you that you have expressed right. previously.
But doesn't it matter
to
most women?
Which he knows. So just right. in your particular case, he is aware of this. So obviously he forgets. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the situation was. He said that the guy looked at him first. Instead, you know, if it were me, I would have said, well, see what she wants. And then you would have ordered, and then we would have been fine. Right. But he didn't do that. Maybe he felt a sense of urgency because of the weirdness of the whole situation. And he's like, oh, he's looking at me. I'm just going to get it out of the way. Maybe that was the thought process, and he forgot what it is that he knows about you.
Did you? That was exactly his excuse.
I'm just saying that's the possibility. That could be what he was thinking. I'm not him. I would have said, don't look at me. Take her order first. Plus, she's the one that said ice cream, Chuck. She's also Jonna Spielborg. If I don't let her order first, she's going to castrate me. So, dude, look over here.
I'm going to have a cone sticking out of my ear
exactly,
hole.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't know her like I do.
I just think, I don't know. To me, it should be automatic. Restaurant, opening doors, ice cream trucks, blackout, bombs, I don't care which. You should always look at your ladies first and say, after you. That's it. Like, you don't have to, like, you lay down your jacket on a puddle as I'm crossing the street, but just after you.
I would find it weird if Craig and I were in a similar situation and then he didn't look to me first. It would be weird.
Because he must
do it every time. I'm not
sure I would. And then you could say to him, no, you go ahead. I'm thinking, or you go ahead.
Right, right, right. But you want first. You want first right of refusal.
I want first right of refusal on that twist with the rainbow sprinkle.
What'd you get from the ice cream man?
I got a twist and no sprinkles. Yeah. So that's why I'm not. If a stranger doesn't hold the door open for me, or actually open the door in the right situation, I get a little miffed. A strange man.
Right.
Not a strange woman. Like, you know, okay, girls, every woman for herself. But
opening a door for somebody is just common.
That's courtesy, right?
Doesn't matter who it is. Male, right. Female, doesn't matter.
But I'm still the type of person, like, if I did go into a grocery store and I've got a lot, which, who am I kidding? That would never happen. But if I did and somebody behind me had two items, I'm going to let him go. I'm the person who, when we're in a line of traffic and somebody's trying to get out of a mall, I wave them on. I'm not the person who tries to cut you off so you can't get in. I'm not that person.
I can't believe that he's gone through this with you.
A million
and
times.
And took the chance to go through it again.
A million.
I would be avoiding that.
And I do want to return back to your point, by the way, that it took a situation at an ice cream truck for them to separate in a blackout.
No.
Okay? For them to walk.
She was okay with that part.
Yeah, that didn't bother
to
me.
Walk by themselves.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
and no again, I hate to say it, and I don't want to, pile on the poor dude, but look, not only did he not look at the guy and say, dude, her first, please. But he also walked away from you in a blackout. I at least would have followed behind you to make sure you were okay. We might not have walked together because we were mad at each other, but I would have still kept my eye on you till we got back to the apartment where we could then continue the silliness of this argument.
That's hilarious. You guys found a whole different angle of funny in this story that I totally missed.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think we're good.
Pumpkin on that note. Who are we talking to today?
Oh, gosh. I hope I am pronouncing
it. I was just going to say, how do we pronounce the name?
All right. I think, we're going to ask her off air, but I think her last name is Nguyen, but her first name, I think, is Nagan. Anyhow, she is an author and a success coach, and she calls herself something very interesting. She is an intuitive consultant, and I'm kind of all over this. Her premise is, you already got whatever it takes to succeed inside you, and she's the one who's going to help pull it out of you. So when we come back, we're going to be talking to, and we may be pronouncing her name completely wrong, Nagan Nguyen, author of, hang on a second, I'm going to tell you right now. Hold on, because this is really fascinating radio right here.
The name of the book?
Yeah.
Self-Defined Success.
That's it.
You Have Everything It Takes.
Yes, you have everything it takes. You already have everything it takes, or you have everything it takes? I think you have
everything. You have everything it takes.
Okay, when we come back.
All right, that is on the way. You are listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we will return. This is K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. We have returned on this Sunday morning, and it is time now to get to our guest in our second segment.
Yes, so forget the way we pronounced her name at the end of the first segment. Because we were all very much way off on the line with us. I cannot wait to dig into this interview. We have an author and consultant by the name of Nan Nguyen. She is the author of Self-Defined Success. You Have Everything It Takes. She's also the co-founder and CEO of, I'm going to screw this name up too, Sintamani Group, an executive coaching and consulting firm. Nan coaches on leadership and empowers entrepreneurs as an intuitive strategist.
I love that term.
Which I know. And I can't wait to learn more about that. So on the line with us, we have Nan Nguyen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and so generous with the introduction. I really appreciate it.
No, well, thank you for being here. So before we begin, because I'm just dying to know, what exactly is an intuitive strategist?
Let's just break that down. So a strategist really is someone who gets you, in the simplest term, right? You are at point A and you want to go point B, and there's a way to navigate it, and that person gets you there. I think that's the simplest term. Someone who does intuitive strategies is if really intuition is our nonlinear intelligence system. So, you know, there's our logical, analytical thinking that really is based on our cultural, you know, our culture, our education, our past experiences. And then our intuition is just a nonlinear way of thinking that taps into our higher intelligence. And I would actually have always been very intuitive. And so my background, of course, is in management consulting and strategy, but I actually probably lean on my intuition to feel out as far as, you know, what's the right path and recommendations for my clients. So, you know, based on that, I just put two and two together, and it felt like it resonated with me, and so I just claimed it for myself.
I love that. Because it's fascinating to me, because I think Carol and I are both, I consider myself pretty intuitive. Consider yourself very intuitive. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be. So, and I love acting on my intuition because I really, really trust it. So for somebody like you to come in, you would sit down with someone, learn about them, learn about their business, and then formulate ideas to get them from where they are to where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly it.
That's awesome.
And Nan, I want to let you know, by the way, that I'm also intuitive. I'm so intuitive that I let them both be intuitive and I don't speak.
He's intuitive and smart that way.
Yeah, you know how to leverage those around you, right? And their strengths. So that's perfect.
So tell us a little bit about Self-Defined Success. How did that book come about?
This has actually been the book that's been in the works for probably a few years. You know, for those who are authors or those wanting to write a book, maybe you can relate that you have this idea for a book and it goes through different evolutions and different names. And this name actually came kind of as a download to me through my intuition. And it's around, I think I've always been a student of personal development through my background. I left home early and really had to find my own way. So studying self-leadership and studying personal development was really what enabled me to really create a life that felt true to me. And so I've been always studying success principles, some of the world's like greatest teachers. And when it came time to start building, I got to a certain point in my career, and when I transitioned to build my coaching business and my consulting business, I really leaned on some of those principles pretty heavily as far as what does it take to really create a vision, right? And like take steps moving forward on that and really make a big pivot in your life. And it just, through that, I just got such a much deeper understanding of these principles that once I, you know, started building my business, I just felt compelled to really share. And so I started writing all these principles down as far as, you know, how does someone take a desire, a longing, or if they're feeling discontent, to really crystallize that into really a clear vision, and then apply some of these success principles in order to really move forward and create that and make that their reality.
So would you say that Abraham Hicks, I think one of their principles is, because Carol and I are big law of attraction freaks.
Mm-hmm.
One of their principles is, you know, in order to know what you want, sometimes you have to first figure out what you don't want, or it's mm-hmm. along those lines. And you talk about breaking through your self-imposed boundaries. And I often wonder, I'm like, well, how do you even know if you have a boundary? But I guess that's when you start feeling uncomfortable or you're not yeah. exactly where you want to be, that must be a boundary, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, sometimes like you get into that rut, that feeling where all of a sudden you're stuck, right? And like, you know, like, you know, you have an inkling of what you want, you know that you can do more or be more and have more, but you're not really sure like why you're not able to break through. You're not really sure what the steps are. You're really unclear. You almost like feel like you're stuck. I think that's where you know that you've really hit a boundary, because like your thinking isn't really allowing you to see the next opportunity or the steps forward, and you feel like when you're stuck at where you're at. Another way to really know that there's a boundary is that when you start wanting to take action and then you feel that like intense fear, like mm-hmm. that's then another boundary where you know that you really hit the edge of like your comfort zone, right? And that it's like the border of the reality that you know. And so, yeah, absolutely. Like these are like the boundaries that we have in our life that like slows us down from really moving forward and moving beyond what our current circumstances.
Nan, I have a question for you. This is Carol. Mm-hmm. So I'm really getting a feel for what you are about. And I absolutely love, because as Jonna mentioned, we're avid readers. We want to mm-hmm. learn. We want to be the best version of ourselves mm-hmm. and make an impact to the best ability we can while we're here. And that mm-hmm. involves a lot of reading and understanding and logic. But the older I've gotten, and I'm not that old, but the older I've gotten, I've learned to trust my intuition more, that it's so wise. But something mm-hmm. you address in your book that I think has met its time more than ever is what mm-hmm. you talk about with authenticity, and that think truly being successful, how that's tied to really being true to yourself. I think, honestly, Nan, it's mm-hmm. harder than ever. There's so much coming at us. There's so much comparison with social media that people have forgotten, like, who they are, what they're about, what matters to them, and that the most powerful version of you is the most authentic one. And can you mm-hmm. speak to that for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. You hit it right on. You know, we have so much coming at us today, and so many options and so many ways of achieving success and what other people are telling us to do, that oftentimes when I talk to clients and I work with people, that they're like, sometimes they feel stuck because they're like, oh, am I supposed to do this or do I do that path? And I always encourage people that, you know, the highest authority we have is ourselves. Like, we have to ask ourselves, what is it that we would love to create into our life? Because the thing is that what I've learned with emotions and feelings is that you can't make yourself feel something, a certain way about something, if you don't, right? And so I learned this in my own experience, where I reached a certain point in my career where it looked really good on paper, mm-hmm. but I didn't necessarily feel the fulfillment. And I'm so grateful for, I learned so much from these opportunities and these jobs and careers and the companies I was with, but I didn't quite feel the way that I thought it was going to make me feel. And I really had to search within as far as, you know, what is it that I want to create and pave that new path for myself. And I really believe that the highest authority we have is ourselves. We really have to look within and really for a moment just suspend, you know, what do we think is possible or what other people are telling us to do or what are other people doing that looks like it's bringing them happiness. And just ask ourselves as far as, you know, what is it that we would love to create, you know, in our lives and what would bring us that joy and when have we felt alive, and start really getting clear on that and pursuing that. And I think it's only in that path that in the end, you know, once we get there, that it will bring that ultimate sense of fulfillment because it was created from, you know, what we would love.
And to become your own authority, we are, mm-hmm. and I'm guilty of this all the time, like doubting myself and my abilities and mm-hmm. looking to other people who I think might know more, or maybe that's part of why I read so much. But yeah. to get back to building a really good relationship with ourselves and trusting the wisdom we have and trusting ourselves and going inside for the answers versus mm-hmm. outside.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Nan, let me ask you a question for some of our listeners out there who, you know, they may be saying to themselves, yeah, you know, there are parts of me that I would like to have come out, but I'm not quite sure where to start. Mm-hmm. What would be yeah. just your first thing you would say to them when it comes to being able to discover some of these things that maybe they're aware of, maybe they're not aware of, but just, mm-hmm. you know, is there, you know, some sort of, I can't think of the word I'm looking for.
A process, a practical way, like a
first step, you know, for them to take a look inside.
Yeah, I think the first step is really to carve out some time for yourself. I feel like so much of authenticity is like making space for yourself to come out, right? And like really listening to that intelligence that's already there, our own internal wisdom. And we live in a universe that speaks to us through two growth signals. It speaks to us through our longings and it speaks to us through our discontent. So when we carve out time and really lean into that and say, you know, what is it that I'm discontent with right now in my current life? And that takes a lot of courage and that takes a lot of compassion and self-love to really allow ourselves to look because sometimes, you know, that's not a comfortable thing. And I think we have a culture that is built around distraction, right? That sometimes we stuff some of these like uncomfortable feelings down or suppress it, but you can't really hide from it. It's always going to be there. And so you really have to have that courage and give yourself permission and space to really look and lean into it. Like, what am I discontent with right now in my current situation? And then translate that into, okay, so what would resolve this discontent? Like, what would that look like? Like, if I answered these longing, like, what am I really longing for? Is it more fulfillment? Is it more time, more space, different, you know, career path, more relationships? Like, what would answer that discontent? And then allow yourself to really get super clear on that and really crystallize that and, like, write it down. I think that would be the first step.
I just want to make a point that I think what you're talking about here is super, super powerful, because when we feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. we will look to something that comforts it. So either getting on social media and filling my head because I don't want to think about it, I don't want to address it, it's right. going to be uncomfortable, so let me just scan social media, let me go have another glass of wine or two or five. And again, I do all of these things myself. I'm human. Yeah. But I think that's the natural reaction is when we feel discontent is to, suppress it or numb it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But I think that becomes a trap that makes us feel worse about ourselves because we spent too much time on social media and didn't get the things done that we needed to, or we drank more than we wanted to, or smoked mm-hmm. or whatever, that to pause and, like you said, with love, have the courage to go in and figure that out, dig it out, and really address it at its root.
Yeah, for sure. Because sometimes the only way out is through, right? You really have to face it, because there's a message there that is trying to tell us something. And so only when we give space to that and really lean into that, then can we really understand. And then, you know, I think sometimes there's that fear of like looking, right? It's like, is it going to be there forever? And I've definitely have experienced it myself where I'm like, you know, if I allow it space, you know, is it going to take over? Is it going to overwhelm me? And like, the thing is that it actually, once you give it space, it actually moves. It already has a space. It's already told you what it needs to tell you, and actually doesn't last that long. And it definitely, you know, you release it and it moves away from you, and you can actually use that energy for something else. So I think it's just, you know, you have to take the time to really listen to yourself.
Amen, sister. I learned that the hard way. I 100% agree with you.
And we've talked we've talked about that quite a lot here. You know, that there's you know, you get rid of the stigma that you're not supposed to be negative, you know, or that you're, you know, nobody wants to hear it, you know, is the old cliche, you know. I would complain, but nobody would listen, that kind of thing. But if you look at it as a yin and a yang, it, you know, it's all part of you, and you have to sit back and you have to recognize it.
Yep.
Because if you don't, then you end up being unequal, and then before you know it, you're putting too much pressure on the happy side.
Yeah,
because you're
yeah,
overcompensating.
For sure.
And then you lose your grip and you wonder what's wrong with you. It's because you never gave space to those normal experiences. And the things that we fear and avoid, they end up becoming, like, we give them more power by doing that.
Yeah, for sure. It's like when you face them, it's like, actually, maybe this is not as bad. Maybe I'm, like, stronger than I gave myself credit for. I actually have what it takes to deal with this and face this.
Do you think it's a good idea, Nan, to when you're in that process, so when you feel the things that are making you discontent as a way to get unstuck, should you also give yourself a little pat on the back, like, and say, okay, I'm not happy in this aspect of my life, but dang, look what I did over the last 5 years, and look what I've accomplished, so that you don't feel like a loser.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key there, when you lean into your discontent, is definitely doing it from a place of compassion. Like, you're not doing it to, like, sit there and beat on yourself for all the things that you're doing wrong. Like, you're purely, your intention is to just lean into it, to know, understand where you're at, what you're not happy with, so that you can shift it, right? And so, you know, maybe giving yourself a time limit, like, I'm just gonna, like, wallow in self-pity for, like, 15 minutes, you know, or like 30 minutes, however long it is. And then, you know, once you get clear, like, I'm not happy with this, is it then, like, shifting and willing yourself to shift out of that and being like, okay, now what would I love, and writing down, like, my ideal life, this is what it will look like. And I think in that space, like, going back to what you mentioned, is like, that takes a lot of, like, claiming yourself, what you've been able to achieve, right, and stepping into more confidence, right? And, like, sometimes when you write out what you would love, it's a little bit like, you know, can I really do that, like, is that really possible for me? And I think in that space, you want to remember, you know, all the things that you've actually been able to achieve. And it's like, sometimes I encourage people to write down, like, an assets list, and, like, of course, not like you can write physical assets, but, like, assets, like, you know, your character, your strength, all the achievements that you've done in your life. And, like, when you make that list, in my experience and what I've encouraged clients to do, that list gets really long. Like, people don't give themselves enough credit. And once you see it, you're like, wow, maybe I'm more capable than I've given myself credit for. Maybe I can go and achieve some of these things that I've written down that I say I want to, that will answer some of that discontent. So absolutely, like, celebrating yourself. You know, I think sometimes we're way too critical on ourselves and we don't celebrate what we've been able to do enough.
You think?
We're all, like, our worst critic,
oh,
right?
Oh my gosh. And you know what just came to me too? Like, that is a really good and helpful exercise to remind yourself of the successes and your good qualities. What a nice, like, we have a Stiletto Network group of girls that get together, that we support each other periodically. We get together and support each other through business and life, and we'll brainstorm and stuff. But what a great exercise as well to do with somebody else who knows you. That you flip that and say, okay, tell me what I'm doing right. Tell me what you observe. Oh, wow. You know, so that and then you can go back and forth and team up and help each other do that. But I love your message, because I have learned this firsthand the very, very hard way, that our discontent, our sadness, our anger, our fear, all those things that we try to avoid and want to avoid because they don't feel good. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
They all contain messages. They all contain knowledge. They all contain messages that can help us if we stop fearing them, face them, and dialogue with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. And I think sometimes we don't face them because we haven't recognized our own inner strength, right, to really deal with some of these emotions and these feelings. And that's in those cases, it's like, that's when you empower yourself with different tools to be able to shift past these emotions, to really build up your confidence and, you know, really know that you can face that and you have the ability to really move beyond them.
See, because in my opinion, I agree with that, because even though it kind of is painful or uncomfortable to look at the source of your discontent and really examine that, to me, being stuck feels worse.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like feeling stuck for too long. You
for
know?
Sure. Yeah.
So,
I think it's, go ahead.
And you help people, you basically help people get unstuck.
Yes, yeah. It's, I love the work too. It's like to really work with someone who, you know, when they first, you know, start work, we start working together, they're telling me, you know, what they're discontent about, what they're stuck in, and then I empower them with like tools to really help them move beyond that. And once you actually understand like how to do it, you know, people are able to move past that very quickly, and it's so rewarding to see, to hear like client wins and stories and see people's like happiness and energy lift up. It's just a really rewarding work.
Do you do one-on-one coaching with people?
Yeah, I do one-on-one coaching and then also in small groups as well, because I work with people through a structured system. And so it really depends on, once I get to know the clients, what they need best, but in both formats. Yeah.
So, okay, we're wrapping up here with Nan Nguyen. Now, I know you have actually a few books, and I think people can access them on your website, but can they also get your latest book on Amazon, Self-Defined Success, You Have Everything It Takes?
Yes, yes. It's on Amazon, and they can also go to my website, and I have all my books there as well.
Now, I just want to do this because it's not like your name is Jane Doe. So if you're looking for Nan, you would want to Google Nan, N-G-A-N. And there's an A, so your middle initial must be H?
Yes,
Nguyen. Okay, so N-G-A-N, NanHNguyen.com. And plus, you're gorgeous. So that's our listeners will be interested in that. And your books are there, and why the people should work with you are there. And you've got some tips. You've got some blogs. Like you, I found the one about five tips to kind of get you past what's bugging you. That was an interesting blog. So if you want to look up Nan, you can do that. N-G-A-N is how you spell her first name. Nguyen is the last name. It's
yes.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm going to spell the last name, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you want me to do
the last
that?
Name.
I would.
Yeah, okay, so we'll spell the last name, too. N-G-U-Y-E-N. And so her website is nanhnguyen.com. Nan, it's been a pleasure.
Yes,
thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. It's a pleasure speaking to everyone.
And congratulations on your latest book.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate you taking the time.
Yes, happy. My pleasure.
All right. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol, and we're not done yet, people. You know we have a third segment, and that is on the way, so stick with us. You're listening to K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time on this Sunday morning to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
Well, Nan was a good guest, and she had some interesting points to make. And it's funny because she's very similar to a lot of other guests that we have, where it all ends up coming back to, you got to recognize all the crap that's in you, the good and the bad.
Yes, and this is because a couple of weeks ago we talked about my latest book, Hello Beautiful, and that is something that I discovered that I was putting on too much positivity, like a Band-Aid all the time. No, I've got to think positive, got to think positive, and like kept suppressing the negative stuff. And it backfired. So so we got to recognize that's part of being human, is all of the emotions. And if we give them space and not fear them, and like she says, to explore them, they will serve you instead of hold you back.
Right. And you might actually discover they're not as bad as you feared.
Exactly.
And you can figure out what it is that causes you to feel that way and then fix it and then move on.
And you can do something about it when you understand it. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of figuring things out, putting a fake smile on your face.
Oh, yeah. So I just came across this crazy article. And I thought of you. There's a new study. This is according to ABC 4 News. A new study suggests fake smiling at work increases drinking habits.
Now, I took this the wrong way. Once Carol explained what the actual report was, my first thought was that you're so annoyed by your coworkers that fake the smiles that you go home and drink to forget them.
Oh, not your own fake smile.
Right. But then, Carol, go ahead. You can explain what it actually is.
Yeah, so the article goes on to say that they have they're using self-control all day long to act like they care, to smile when they have to, and they're faking it, that by the time they get home, they've like spent all their self-control. So this person says that they believe by faking or suppressing emotions, the workers are using much of their self-control, leaving less to regulate how much they drink.
Now, hang on.
Fake smiling is part of your job.
But wait a minute.
They're saying there's a good chance you're drinking too much.
Wait a minute.
We're waiting.
Because
go.
We know that sometimes if you put a smile on your face, like, let's say you're having a conversation with somebody and you're not feeling that great, and you put a smile on your face and have that conversation, it actually will lift your spirit so you genuinely feel happy.
It can. I think this is talking about maybe you're a waitress or a waiter working in a place where you have a particularly annoying, repeatedly annoying clientele, and you always have to put a smile on when you really want to punch them in the face. So I think this is about like in a repeated setting where you got to put on a fake smile that you aren't feeling, it wears you down and you're going
to
drink.
Or maybe when you have to, anytime you have to exhibit some sort of self-restraint because
repetitively
you're in a public place, right, and it wouldn't be proper. You'll lose your license to practice law if you punch him in the face. I mean, things like that. Like, you know, anyway.
And funny, right, and they said, so I just use waiters and waitresses as an example, not picking on them, just saying they have to deal with...
Well, they deal with a lot of people,
right,
all the time.
And who probably are quicker to complain than... not. So she said that the previous research has shown a connection between service workers and problems with drinking. And the cause was unknown. Now they think maybe it's...
Now there's a connection.
That fake smile you got to wear all day.
Yes, being forced to live by the credo of the customer is always right.
You know that... Remember how... We haven't talked about this in a while, but we had that when you're having a particularly annoying day, which happens every once in a while, where wouldn't it be really cool if there was one day a year that you could just... get away.
Let it out.
Oh, that's with right, saying exactly what's on your mind to everybody. Customers, employees.
Yes, one day of the year where you can look and say, you know, imagine? What, customer, you are not right today.
And I'm going to punch you right in the throat unless you get out of my... Like, imagine having that freedom. No consequences to say whatever you want to say.
Now, that isn't there a movie awesome franchise about that right now? Except it involves a lot more death.
It's The Purge.
The Purge.
Yes. One day a year for 24 hours, you don't get in trouble for murder.
You can kill people.
You get all lawless.
See, now, I think I'm probably getting older. Because if I there are days when I just want to lay into somebody. But then I think ahead, I'm like, if I did that 10 minutes later, I would feel guilty and I would feel bad. And that keeps me from choking people.
Well, it is nice to have some self-restraint, especially when you are a lawyer, though it is always nice to know that you could defend yourself.
Yeah.
And you would save a lot of money. You know what I mean? For however much per hour you might charge yourself, you're not going to do that because you're yourself.
That's true. And I would just have to justify why that person needed to be choked.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
And I'm sure they're, you know, I'm sure you could find it, you know.
Haven't you watched The Purge, Your Honor?
I do think, though, if you, it does come through, if you try to put a smile on your face when you don't feel like smiling, it can actually be helpful. Maybe not if you're doing it over and over and over again.
Oh, right. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
Right. That's what the article was referring to.
And, you know, nothing wrong with having a cocktail every now and then.
All right. Well, before we close up shop, I am just going to read two headlines that perfectly example the state of the world that we live in today.
Okay.
Headline number one. A strip club is offering its old couches for free.
Ew!
But warns they may be stained.
Ew!
And two, because social media has so dumbed us down in so many regards, people are stapling bread to trees in a new dumb viral trend.
Why? I saw that. What is that supposed to do? Like, do squirrels come by and eat it or something?
I don't know. I just
jumping out of the car and running to a song, slamming into telephone poles.
I just don't know. I read the headline and I started to drool.
What was the thing people were putting up their noses not that long ago? Oh my god!
Actually,
stuff up their noses.
The funny first line in this story is: viral trends like this make me wish people would go back to swallowing Tide Pods.
Oh god,
that was another one.
On trees. That's weird.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. On that note.
Anyway, this has been Happy Hour again with John Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. We'll be back next Sunday, same time, 7 o'clock, and we will catch you right here on K104. You all have a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with John Spilborg and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.